You are listening to the Scottish Football Marketing Podcast. On this episode, Chris Sampson and I were joined by Chris Cairns from Facebook. Facebook and Instagram have evolved a lot over the years, so we thought it was about time we got someone on the podcast to help us understand what we should know when it comes to two of the biggest social media platforms in the world. Enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to the Scottish Football Marketing Podcast. I'm Chris Sampson from Sports Marketing Scotland, and I'm with the Scottish FA's digital manager, Michael Boko. Hello, Michael.
Hi, Chris.
How are you today? Not bad?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad too. We've done a couple of these podcasts in the past where we've gone kind of head first into a specific platform. We spoke to Elizabeth Stranges about Twitter. Farhan Ahmed came on to speak about Twitch. And I was actually just looking at this the other day, but way back in 2018 now, we spoke to Robin Richmond about online paid advertising in general. Today, we're focusing on Facebook, and we've got Chris Cairns with us, who works in sports partnerships for the tech giant. Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
No problem at all. Thanks for coming on to chat to us. I guess we'll just get straight into it then. Give us a little bit of an introduction to you and tell us about your role and what you do at Facebook.
Yeah, so I've been at Facebook for 5 years. Started off in the UK in our EMEA team. Working in sports, and then moved out to the US about 2.5 years ago now. So in the kind of heavy HQ of Facebook over here. But kind of the Facebook sports team is set up as a free consultancy service for sports entities, helping them better understand how they can use our platform. So obviously Facebook isn't just the blue app that everyone knows us as. We obviously have Instagram, WhatsApp, Messenger, and obviously Oculus now as well. So we really provide support and consultancy across how we can best leverage those apps to drive value for sports entities and really make them successful.
This might be quite a harsh first question potentially, but is it still worthwhile for clubs to be posting on Facebook?
Harsh, but one that we get a lot, to be honest. But yeah, I mean, definitely. It's still by far the biggest platform when we look at reach. We have 2.3 billion users every day. 2.9 billion a month. So the Facebook blue app is still the place to be. But obviously Facebook is again, you know, even within the blue app, much bigger than just newsfeed historically has been. We have Facebook Watch, our video destination that has 1.25 billion people visiting every month. So that's the destination for long form video consumption. And so it's a great way to really get your brand out there and your name out there. And for football teams, it kind of travels so globally because we all understand the sport of football and it's easy to connect with teams across the world. It's a great way to really grow your audience and let them know the story that you're trying to tell. We've also branched out into kind of live broadcasting recently, and we've hit some record numbers for our Champions League final broadcast last year, where we had almost 40 million people across Latin America watching. So there's a huge audience still on Facebook. So definitely an opportunity to tap into that.
I suppose, Chris, then, there's been much been said about Facebook's algorithm in particular, about the common perception that to be successful, you have to, you now need to pay for your reach. How do you address those concerns?
Yeah, it's a good question. I like to break it down, and we can use a sports analogy where, you know, if you're a team with loads of money, you're expecting that you're going to be successful. And kind of that's how I would look at newsfeed. If you're looking at free agents and you're trying to bring in players for free, or you're posting organically, you're going to have success. You're going to be able to grow, but you are going to be competing with other pages and other brands that are going to be spending more money on the platform to really grow their audience. So the growth is going to come much quicker if you're going to invest on the paid side. You're able to amplify your message beyond just the people connected to your page or connected to your Instagram account. And you're going to be able to target more people. But if you want to engage your kind of current fan base and you want to keep people up to date with what's going on, Facebook and Instagram are still the place to be. And the algorithm is still going to make sure that people see that content. But if you're looking to really grow kind of exponentially, then pay is the way to go.
And so, and looking at it then, if paid's a bit of the way to go, would you recommend then clubs obviously factor that into, and I suppose is that the same for Instagram as well? Is probably my first question should be, and then second of all, if that is the case, should clubs be, if they can, factoring that into the sort of business and budgeting?
Yeah, I mean, Instagram's a little bit different, and it's less saturated. It's still a kind of growing platform, and we do have the Discover tab as well. So it's maybe a bit easier to kind of discover new pages or new accounts on Instagram than it is on Facebook without kind of searching for them. Hashtags are obviously a bit more popular on Instagram, and the Discover page kind of serves content that we think you'll like but isn't related to any accounts that you're following. So that does tend to help with kind of audience growth. On the Facebook side, in terms of paid, it really depends what your objective is. Like I said, paid is the way to go if you really want to grow that audience quickly. Again, think of it as a football team that's struggling. If you're, you know, fighting against relegation, the way to get out of it tends to be to invest money in new players as a quick fix to kind of get out of it. Whereas long term, if you want to really grow a sustained audience, you want to develop the players that you have, you want to develop your youth team, you don't want to be spending money to kind of have a quick fix. And that's where I'd apply it to Facebook as well. If you need to kind of quickly hit numbers, then pays the way to go about it. You know, if you have sponsorship commitments or you're looking to really get a big audience for a major push that you're making, then pays a great opportunity to do that. But if you're looking at more sustainable growth, then I think just having a really clear organic posting strategy is the way to do it. We've seen actually the best way to really grow a sustained audience is having a really consistent and regular posting strategy. So that could be posting a particular type of video every Monday morning at 9 a.m. So fans know that they go to your Facebook page at 9 a.m. on a Monday morning and they're going to get the highlights from the weekend game, or they're going to get the pre-match or post-match conference from one of the coaches or one of the players. And it just builds up that regular behavior where that becomes a tune-in moment, as opposed to people scrolling through feed and stumbling across something.
Yeah, I guess if we kind of rewind on that, you maybe brought up a good point there about what does make a successful content strategy on Facebook or Instagram too. But take us through maybe a couple of examples of some teams that are doing a good job there, and then a little bit more about what role Facebook and Instagram should play in teams' business plans and content plans.
Yeah, I think on the examples of teams doing a really good job kind of posting organically, we have a great example in Belgium of Club Brugge, who during lockdown, the Belgian league actually shut down early. So they kind of had a half season of nothing to do, but obviously needing to keep fans engaged to get them ready for the next season, not have them binging too much Netflix and kind of forgetting about football. So what they did is they created a kind of a lockdown series where they would post at the same time every week, a kind of long form video. So it'd be a regular tune-in moment. And you would get all your fans coming as though they were tuning into the game or a press conference that was kind of structured. It's a great way of just making sure your fans are all coming in, commenting, engaging at the same time with each other, but knowing what type of video or what type of content they're going to see. So to me, that's a great example of, even if you don't have games going on, so as we go into the off-season or with the lockdown, potentially limiting access to game footage, just having some sort of behind the scenes or magazine show that fans know when it's going to be on and that they can engage with other fans about as well. Another example in the US that's been really popular is tapping into groups. So the Miami Dolphins, when lockdown happened, created an official group where they hosted what would have been physical in-person events within the group. So virtual draft party nights. So when the NFL draft happened, obviously, people would tend to congregate in bars or at the stadium to kind of watch the draft and see who the Dolphins were going to pick. They hosted all of that within a group, and they could actually then leverage that as a business opportunity to see people that were engaged in the group. Maybe they could upsell them for season tickets, merchandise when the new jersey was launched, or membership and hospitality packages as well. So to kind of tap into your second question, I would say, you want to make sure that you're kind of building this audience, but really you want to have a business objective as well. And we kind of think about four business objectives that you should have with your Facebook audience. And this includes Instagram as well. The first one is, how do you grow the kind of next generation of fans of your team? So obviously we know a lot of season ticket holders tend to be on the older side, and you want to keep bringing younger people through the gate. So obviously the social platforms are a great way to tap into that younger audience, build that affinity, really tell your story from your point of view to that fan base, and then get them engaged and get them into the stadium or get them into the online store or get them into the membership program that you're running. Conversions and commerce is obviously a huge objective for teams. So how do you sell your online products, be that tickets, be that merchandise? How do you sell that through to your fan base. And obviously, if you have a huge social audience, it should be pretty easy to convert them via Facebook. And we have a number of different advertising tools focused purely on kind of the conversion side. And then we've obviously built out Instagram shopping and Facebook Marketplace as a kind of in-platform shopping experience as well. So that's another area that I'd look at. Sponsorships for clubs are a huge objective, obviously. And looking at different ways you can either upsell your current sponsors or look at bringing on new brand partners as well by creating additional assets, probably on the social or digital side, you can sell against these sponsors. Or looking at ways that you can actually increase revenue from your existing sponsors, like I said, in upselling them, not just doing a in-person man of the match, but maybe there's an international man of the match that you have as well that's voted for by your social fans. And you can create a branded content asset or a branded content series around that. And then finally, we have our on-platform in-stream ads business as well. So these are the video ads that you see in Facebook. So again, if you're pumping out a lot of video content on Facebook, we're going to hopefully roll this out on Instagram shortly as well. You can insert ads into your business, into your videos, which again is another revenue stream for these entities.
Plenty to unpack there. I think we'll probably come back to them, quite a few of them, a little bit later on too. But I just wanted to quickly ask you, Michael, about kind of the Scottish FA approach to Facebook as well, and how that feeds into the overall content plan that you guys have in place.
Yeah, so we currently manage two channels on Facebook. I suppose the biggest one for us is the Scotland national team. And touching a little bit on what Chris said there, we do use it for some of business objectives. So in and around matches, in the good old days, as it feels like, we would heavily use Facebook ads to promote tickets and generate revenue off the back there. We put a lot of our video content on Facebook. We do find that reach is up and down on it. I think there is times where when we put a video out and I thought it would do really well and we haven't because the algorithm or what it is, and it's worked better on other channels. And that's where we probably need to be a bit smarter and quicker reactive, that if we spot something that we don't think it's getting the reach that it probably we think it deserves, then we should get on that a bit quicker. We've got some plans in place around the Euros, so how that might be a bit more effective and how that works for us. We do a lot of live content. I say a lot of live content for us when we do have live on Facebook. So obviously it's not weekly or anything like that, but when we have got matches, we will put press conferences online. We'll put youth matches on Facebook as well and make them all live. So we've looked at that. And you know, we've looked at our approach to Facebook and what we probably haven't in the past posted as regular as we probably should have. And it's probably a question I've got for Chris off the back of this, but you know, we've started doing a little bit more of the sort of retro nostalgia imagery, static images where comments and stuff like that, and they seem to actually work pretty well for us for the most part. So I suppose my question for you, Chris, then is, you know, how often should a club be looking to post? Is there certain rules or guidance that Facebook gives on regularity of posting? Obviously, we always say quality over quantity, but is there an element that you should be posting slightly more regularly if you want to help build that reach and engagement with your fans?
Yeah, it's a great question, and there's no kind of perfect answer. What I would say is you want to be consistent more than worrying about the number. So if you go from posting twice a day for a month, and then for a week you post 50 times a day, obviously there's going to be a huge skew in the reach and distribution those 50 videos are going to get compared to the two each day, because you're still focused on that same audience. It's going to come across as a huge kind of glitch in the kind of algorithm in terms of that big jump. But also, you know, for us, we need to have people that we can serve it to. So depending on the size of your page, if you only had 100 followers, for instance, I know you guys have far more than that. But also there needs to be a balancing act in the type of content they're seeing and how often they're engaging with our platform. So I would say the most important thing is consistency. You're right to focus on quality. Make sure it's something that people are going to watch or engage with, because that's what's going to help you most in the algorithm. but then steadily look to increase that. So I would think of it almost in terms of the content themes that you're producing. So you talk about the stuff on match day, which is kind of self-explanatory, but is there stuff that goes on behind the scenes during the week that maybe could become a content series? And then that would increase your posting output maybe to an extra 2 videos a week. Then you bring in a different layer of a different perspective, and that adds you an extra 2 or 3 videos a week as well. But the focus should definitely be on video in terms of what you're producing. That's the way our platform's moving, but also the way that viewers are obviously engaging with content across all these platforms on social. So I would say consistency is key, and try not to go from posting once or twice a week to 10 or more and then back to 1 or 2, because that's where you're going to see big issues with distribution. One thing I should have mentioned that was another point you made, Michael, in terms of you post a video that you think is going to do great, then you kind of get disappointed with the distribution and reach you're getting. We do actually have a new A-B testing tool within Creator Studio, which is our publishing platform, an insights platform on Facebook and Instagram. So you can actually run different thumbnails or different video lengths or even different videos with different captions. Run them both as an A-B test and see which video or which kind of version of the video is performing best. And then use that as your kind of fully go-to-market post. So it runs a small test with a sample of your audience to see which video or which post, I should say, is getting the most engagement. And then it will amplify the one that outperforms the other. So that's a great way of if you have those internal debates about which player to focus on or which thumbnail to use, this tool should actually help you solve some of those as well. It should take some of that kind of guesswork away.
Is it the same then with Instagram? I suppose some of the similar rules apply then in terms of trying to be consistent with what you're doing. But obviously with Instagram, even though I know obviously there's Instagram products now that focus a lot on video, but for the general feed is just be that consistency and go for the sort of quality.
I would say so, yeah. And look at how you're leveraging the different formats on Instagram in terms of stories versus feed versus IGTV as well. It's obviously kind of a bit more broken out than Facebook is, in that there's different destinations you can publish to as well on Instagram. But yeah, video is definitely the way to go. I'd be consistent in feed and maybe leverage stories as one of those that you go heavy when there's a lot of content that you want to get out. And that also then prevents you, what people say, like spamming feed with too much content, if you feel like that's something that you're running into, a challenge you're running into. Maybe leverage stories as a way of kind of filtering out the best stuff or the not so good stuff, but messages that you still want to get out there, and focus on feed on the really kind of quality content, and keep that consistent as you can each day or each week.
I was just thinking there, I was trying to remember the name, because I think it is. We've done a few things with video on Facebook around Premiere. So it's, instead of scheduling, it's kind of a countdown. Do you find that as popular amongst clubs?
Yeah, we have found that really popular when you have like a specific moment you want to drive tune into. So obviously you mentioned the Euros. If you have the squad announcement and that's going to be a produced video, and you don't want to do it live, you want to do it as a VOD, but you want to have that tune-in appointment to view moment. The advantage of Premieres is that it actually makes sure that all the fans are watching that video at the same time. So although it's not live, because people are watching at the same time, because they've got the notification, they know when it's happening, they interact in real time. So it's great in terms of letting Facebook know this is quality video, because there's lots of comments, and not just one-off comments, but people engaging with each other in the comments section. But also, it's a great way of just being able to see when you publish a video, how many people are tuning into that at once. You get the CVC counter to see the concurrent viewers as well. So yeah, for a major tune-in moment, it's a great way of leveraging our platform.
And can you give us examples of content that Facebook probably doesn't encourage or doesn't like? I remember a while ago, Facebook tried to, or I think they did try to clamp down on how certain competitions were run, for example.
Yeah, I'm not sure on the specific competition ones you're asking for, but there are policies around, obviously, gambling and real-time or real gaming is a real difficult one that is kind of legislative as opposed to Facebook, because it's, gambling laws are so different, where I am in the US compared to where you guys are in the UK. So stuff like that does become difficult. And again, even partnering with betting companies or gambling companies in your posts, if you're tagging them as branded content, that might limit your reach to certain markets where gambling is illegal as well. So there's kind of the legislative policy side is one issue. The other thing that I would say to be wary of is kind of unoriginal content. So where you're cutting clips that maybe you don't own the full rights to, but you think it's something that would be interesting to share with your fans, try and steer clear of that, just because IP is such a hot topic now, and there are real protections to make sure that the original publisher gets the full credit for posting this content. So they're the two main ones. In the terms of kind of quality analysis of the type of stuff that you're producing, I would say just make sure it's stuff that fans are going to be interested in and fans are going to want to see. If you're publishing something saying it's live when it's clearly not live, that probably isn't going to go down too well with fans. And obviously they do have the ability to report posts as being inaccurate. And then looking at ways that you can really leverage video to tell full stories. So we see a lot of people that flood their feed with links back to their website and then wonder why their Facebook audience isn't growing. But clearly the way that you grow your Facebook audience is giving a good on-platform experience. So if you're going to drive people away from the platform and onto your O&O, it's going to be very hard to grow your Facebook audience because eventually they're just going to go directly to your O&O. So they would be my main recommendations.
Plenty to think about there. I think your points around gambling definitely hit home with me. I know football is obviously, there's plenty of gambling sponsors, so definitely something to keep in mind for clubs and organisations as well there, for 100%. I wanted to touch on something that you mentioned earlier, one of your examples you gave, and that was Facebook groups as well. You've obviously mentioned an example about one of the clubs in America kind of branching out into that, the Miami Dolphins. But have you seen any more examples of that, and would you recommend it more?
Yeah, I mean, to me, I think it's massively underutilized, to be honest, by sports teams. The way I think of sports teams, they connect so closely with the Facebook mission in terms of building and connecting communities. And that's really what sports teams do, particularly in, you know, places like the UK, where, you know, in Scotland and England, a lot of the town and the community is built around the football stadium in the center of town. And I think during COVID, a major opportunity from teams would have been to kind of take that physical presence of being the center of the community onto the digital stage. So you could have had, I haven't seen this yet, maybe there are some out there, but where a team effectively owns like the community notice board, if you like, where during COVID, you know, if people are looking for work or people are offering to do work, you know, if you're a builder and you're looking for work or you need a contractor to come and fix your sink, having an official page within that community could be a great way to really stay the center of the community, but also let people know where they can go to get kind of trusted support, if you like. So I think there's a lot that teams could do in terms of groups and just building that kind of community side that they do so well off the field and physically, actually on the digital space. But we have seen a lot of great examples with groups. Again, in the US, there's a lot of MLB teams that run groups. And we've seen a lot of great kind of community activity when COVID hit and people were struggling with support. There were people that offered to go and do grocery runs for kind of elderly fans that are part of the group, or check in on relatives that were in different cities. And then when games were happening, we touched on earlier, it was so much nicer when you could go to games, but people offering up tickets. There was a campaign we saw in one group, I think it was for the Washington Nationals when they went on the World Series run. There was like a fundraising effort to get to buy tickets for this family that had been hard hit, but really wanted to go. They've been going to games for sort of 30, 40 years. So there's so much that kind of the community can do for you. And the one advantage of when it's a group rather than a page is that you can kind of step back as the team and almost be the monitor rather than having to create the content yourself all the time. Kind of hear what the fans are saying. That should inform your content strategy on your page as well. But you don't have to worry about an extra 5 videos to go in the group every day when there's a really active kind of fan base there already.
I think it's a super interesting one, and one that I don't know. I don't know how I see it playing out in practice with some of the Facebook groups that I've seen. I know I'm a member of a couple with a club that I support, and I'm just trying to work out how it would go if the club actually officially joined one of these, or if the club had one itself. But I'm sure it would be interesting nonetheless if it did happen.
It's interesting, Chris, actually, because I went in and as a sort of semi official presence in a Scotland one for a while, and I tried to answer as many questions as I can and give updates. And to be fair, just with everything that went on and just other things, that kind of fell from the wayside. There's always negativity in there. And I think that was one thing that I was warned about before I did it was, you know, are you prepared that people are not going to listen to what your answers are, no matter if you're telling the truth, which obviously I was, but there's always going to be your detractors. And, you know, I try to do answer as many sort of questions within that group as I can and be as open and honest as possible. And it's maybe something I probably should look at picking back up again. Speaking to one or two fans anecdotally, they seem to find it of use. But I definitely think, based on what the Abacus was saying, is there's definitely a lot of potential in it for clubs. It's just that regularity of maintaining it is probably the challenge that a number of clubs would find.
Yeah. But I think, again, that could be an advantage where if you start off strong and get a good fan base engaged, hopefully they take a lot of that off your plate. And then maybe you run, again, I keep coming back to consistency, but maybe it's a case where you just tap into it kind of two or three times a week for regular kind of updates. So maybe you run a quiz every Friday night and give away, you know, a prize or a discount in the online store. Or maybe when tickets are back and people can go to games, you give away tickets as part of that. Maybe on a Wednesday, you kind of share content from the page, like a major post around the build up to the game or a training video. And maybe on Monday is a kind of taking questions almost where people want to talk about the game and you kind of share that. But again, when you're owning the group rather than one of these unofficial ones where you feel like it's maybe is a bit negative, you do have a lot more control. So you can kind of add moderation in terms of, you know, the words that people use and the way that they interact. If you do get trolls from opposition teams or people that maybe are there just to kind of cause offense, they can be removed from the group as well by yourself. So owning the group also gives you a lot more control. Yes, it is a little bit more work definitely to get up and running, but the beauty of groups is that fans tend to be a bit more engaged and a bit more or feel a bit safer when they're interacting with fans of the same team. They're not going to get trolled by opposition fans when it's in a private group, which feels a bit more like a safe space. So you tend to see more engagement as well.
Yeah, I mean, we actually do use Facebook groups, but not for the national team, as our coach education team. I've created a community that is an ever-growing community of Scottish coaches and beyond that can go in, get information on what's happening with Scottish FA coach education and ask questions. And there's a number of the team that are in there, not just Greg Patterson, who heads up our coach education team, but a number of his staff that are there on hand that try to answer questions that are directed at them. And then there's other coaches that will ask general questions, generalizations, or it's a private group. You have to be accepted in. There's moderation, there's other bits, but yeah, look, it's a valuable thing that over the last two or three years has really sort of been part of a tool in the armory, if you like, to help build that community of coaches.
That's great. Yeah. And that's a great use case as well. And something that, again, as a federation, definitely should be leveraged by more people like yourselves. Because I think it's a great way of really, yeah, spreading that education out there and putting it in a place where people can find it easily as well on Facebook.
If we look at another then sort of tool or that Facebook have got, I mean, and we talked about it a bit earlier, we broadcast our under 21 and other youth matches on Facebook, and we've seen more leagues as you even alluded to partner with Facebook. What are the benefits to using Facebook Live and that over maybe some of the other platforms, and have you got any sort of tips or tricks that people should listen for?
Yeah, I mean, one of the main benefits is it's a free platform. It's a free platform where all your fans already are, so there shouldn't be any marketing effort from you guys, because your fans are already there, ready to be kind of broadcast to, and the tools are ready to go and ready to broadcast from. And we're always iterating on it. We're always making enhancements based on feedback we get from guys like yourselves and some of the other leagues we work with. So we've taken feedback on. There's now a new graphics package in there. So again, I know one part of broadcasting tends to be partnering with brands and sponsors and making sure you give them the right amount of airtime. So we actually have a graphics package where you can, within the Facebook tool, build out lower thirds, upper rights. We also have a video tool, so you can insert video ads as well as static ads as well. And that's all integrated into the single solution, which makes it easier. And then more recently, again, something that a lot of clubs have asked for with the fact they can't have fans in the stadium is, if they are going to broadcast games, is there a way to monetize these directly from fans? So we built out a pay-per-view tool called Paid Online Events, where you can charge fans an admission fee to be able to see that stream. So again, if you were to broadcast a youth team game and you wanted to charge £5 or £2 for people to see it as a way of just kind of making up for the lost gate revenue, that's another avenue that you can go down on Facebook. And again, that's all integrated. And currently there's no cost to you in terms of the pay-per-view tool either. So all the money that you raise from ticket sales, if you like, would be kept by the team or by yourselves as well.
Chris, as well, just obviously you mentioned that kind of shortfall there, and we know in the current climate that the clubs are struggling financially as well. What other types of tools does Facebook have that can offer clubs to help them monetize things a little bit more on the platform?
Yeah, there's another one that really stands out to me that I think has been underutilized by sports teams especially, which is our monthly subscription tool called Fan Subscriptions. So this is where fans would pay a monthly fee to get access to kind of behind the paywall content. So that could be exclusive videos. There's also the option to have a group set up for fans that are paying this fee. And then you can also offer them kind of off Facebook benefits as well. So maybe if they sign up for your monthly subscription, they get a discount in your online store, or they get entered into a raffle to win a prize, which could be tickets or a free season ticket next season or something along those lines. But again, that's a great way of monetizing your content beyond the in-stream ad revenue that we mentioned at the start. So if you are looking at different ways to monetize your fan base or build out a membership program even without having to build a new interface, again, it's a free tool to set up. And you would just make those, or you would get those monthly payments from fans. And again, it's easy to advertise because you would just be marketing it to your Facebook audience and Instagram audience immediately. We mentioned Instagram shopping. Again, if you are looking to push more merchandise, particularly at the start of the season or around the holidays, being able to tag products and almost get free advertising, if you like, on Facebook, where it's a one-click kind of checkout, is a great tool to tap into as well. And something I'd highly recommend. And then one of the ones that we get asked the most is, how do they make up kind of the lack of sponsorship activations they're able to do, because there's no one in the stadium, there's no one in the hospitality suites. How can teams kind of make up that kind of sponsorship revenue? And we kind of touched on it earlier in the branded content, but I would really think carefully around almost building out social and content series. We partnered with Goal, obviously the big football platform, who did some live streaming of football rivalries, but on FIFA. So they basically built out this whole new content series called Rival Rumble, where every Sunday afternoon, like Super Sunday in the UK, they would broadcast these games on FIFA, and they would actually sell that as an asset to a sponsor. And they had a barbecue company that basically bought their title sponsor for each of these videos. I think there are about 10 in total. And they got well over 2 million views. So again, it's a huge opportunity to monetize the content that you're already creating, or look at different ways that you can create new assets for sponsors as well.
Was there any other examples of teams that you've spotted using those tools, other than Goal, obviously, for the last one and kind of selling that content, but around even shopping on both Facebook and Instagram as well? What's the kind of best practice there that you've seen?
Yeah, I mean, on the fan subscription side, we had we've seen a lot of teams kind of move into it recently. We've had a few teams in Romania that have had a lot of success in using this as their kind of core membership product. So fans are paying kind of $5 a month, so about £4 a month. They get access to all the youth team and reserve team games that previously wouldn't have been broadcast. And it's a great way to then kind of reimburse the club in the production costs. But then they also offer them kind of shopping discounts. They do Q&As with coaches and really make it so that fans can't be in the stadium, but they feel as close probably as they've ever been to the coaches and the players. And they run a lot of cool activations like Q&As, signed shirts at the giveaways, that type of stuff. And then in the US, we've seen a few of the minor league baseball teams tap into it as well, where the rights are a little bit different in how they're distributed. So the team often owns their own rights, so they can broadcast all their games, all their home games, but it also means they can mix up some of the production as well. So rather than just filming from a kind of camera in the stadium, they can film it with a drone and see if that's something that maybe would get fans more engaged, where they get kind of the opportunity to watch this content with different camera views, different camera angles as well. And then in the off season, if they run documentaries or behind the scenes content, it just keeps people engaged without them churning or moving away. On the shopping side, there's a lot of partners in the US that, again, have done a lot of really good stuff. And actually, not even the core kind of partners that we'd expect, but some of the more digipub partners, so digital first publishers like Players Tribune, Undisputed, that have really tapped into their merchandise line and leveraging Instagram as a way of promoting that. All the big kind of US sports teams are great at kind of tagging up their products and seeing success. But it's interesting to see, it's almost a kind of an awareness campaign as well for some of these kind of publishing first properties that actually have a merchandise line as well. And it's a great way, again, to get that kind of free awareness campaign using Instagram.
I suppose Instagram's an interesting one that I wanted to sort of pick up on, and that I think there's obviously a lot of different elements to Instagram that maybe we're guilty of it from a national team point of view, in that we probably generally just use stories, we use the traditional feed, we do paid partnerships where we can, and I don't even think we've done enough around the shopping stuff that we probably need to do more than that. But one of the ones I wanted to ask you about is obviously Instagram rolled out Reels recently. It's just, and it's now got quite prominence on the app, because there's a couple of times I've clicked on the Reels button thinking I'm still clicking on the add photo button, because that's where it used to be. But are many people using Reels? I suppose is my first question, and that's not meant to be a difficult question, it's just a one that I'm interested in. And second of all, is there good examples of, you know, it's easy to see individuals using it. It's a bit like, and I'm sure I shouldn't really mention TikTok at this stage, but you see a lot of individuals doing a lot of good stuff on TikTok, and there's only really a handful of organizations or clubs or brands that really sort of nail that down pretty well.
Yeah, and you can mention TikTok, just not in a good way around here. But no, you're right to ask the question. And actually, I think you touch on a really interesting point, which is, again, I keep talking about underutilized assets, but the players and the kind of the personalities you have at a team are so underutilized often on social media, that really the most success we've seen on the team side in Reels is where you almost hand the phone off to an athlete or a player or a coach to kind of do the Reels for you. And if you've got, you know, big personalities in the team, I'm a big Tottenham fan. I know Lucas Moura has done a lot on the Spurs Instagram recently in terms of takeovers, and Reels, again, has been a big part of that. So I would say absolutely you should be leveraging your athletes to kind of create this. And that's going to help them grow their social platform and their branding. But also it's going to help you kind of, again, with the content creation side. So Reels is definitely a kind of individual first product, in terms of it needs to be kind of one or two people behind the camera, or in front of the camera, I should say. But there's no reason that you as a team shouldn't be tapping into your athletes to kind of create that content for you. You know, or do competitions between them and film that as Reels, because as you said, it gets so much prominence in the app that whether people stumble across it thinking they're going to take a photo or upload a photo, or it's something that they just are interested in from the home screen, if you're not there, again, you're kind of missing out on a potential audience as well.
I'm conscious of time and where we're at. If people have teams are looking for more information on guides or support, from a Facebook point of view or an Instagram point of view, where should they go? Where can they get the right guidance?
Yeah, I'll make sure that we get some links added in the description for the podcast. But we have a great partner resource hub where you can get information and up-to-date information on all our latest products and tools, as well as some of the examples I spoke about today, but our case studies around how people have had success or teams have had success with these tools as well. And it will all be sports focused. So don't feel like you're going to get generic materials. It's going to be how you as a sports team or as a sports entity can have success. We also run webinars very regularly. We're going to kick off our new season at the start of March. So again, if people want to sign up for these, they're all free to attend. There's going to be about 8 webinars, one per week. where you can learn about different topics. So a lot of the stuff we've spoken about today in terms of Facebook Live, advertising on Facebook, branded content, paid online events. If people do want to get in for more information, would highly recommend registering for a webinar there as well.
Great. Thank you so much, Chris. And I guess just to wrap up from me, you obviously gave a couple of examples there of places where people could go. And I think we mentioned earlier on in terms of potentially, I'm sure you know, Michael and I try and aim the podcast at all levels of Scottish football. And if clubs and maybe individuals are struggling for resource, I think if they go to those places and they maybe join a webinar and they learn something from it, then surely they can take that back to their club and kind of improve things on Facebook and Instagram. What would you say that's the case? Definitely.
Definitely, yeah. I think they're going to get a lot of great information. And I think the way that we always frame it is not just, you know, this is how you use the tool, but this is how you can drive real value for your business, whether that is a team, a league, a media company. This is how you're going to see kind of real world business value from it as well. So I like to think, yeah, that they definitely get a lot of success and a lot of value from it.
Great. Chris, thank you so much. I know we chatted about plenty of examples there, so I think this is one that maybe people might listen back to once they've listened to a first time as well. I think that could be a good recommendation from us. And anything else you want to finish up with before we head off?
No, just thanks very much for having me, guys. Appreciate it. And, you know, look forward to seeing your audience at some of these webinars we have in the next few weeks.
Definitely. Might join myself just to pick up some tips as well. So, yeah, I'll see you there.
You're welcome. You're always welcome.
Excellent. Michael, thank you. And Chris, thanks again for coming on. Really appreciated that.
Thanks, guys.
See you next time.